This is Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on TNT.
Yes, you better believe it. It's Tuesday, the 30th of April, 2024, TNT. Today's News Talk. I'm Rick Munn. This is Locked and Loaded, our number two. Hope you enjoyed our number one. If you didn't, tough. It's gone now. There's nothing we can do about it. Let's have fun in the second hour, and I hope you all stay tuned and leave your thoughts, comments, opinions, suggestions, of course, in our live chat. And I have been delving into it there during our little break between the news and the start of the show. So thank you to everybody for tuning in this morning and leaving your lovely questions and comments, and even the banter that you have amongst each other in the live chat. It's really nice to see some of the comments that are being posted up there. So what's coming up in this hour? Well, I'm going to be talking to Jim again in just a minute, and then I will be joined by Nick Buckley from the Greater Manchester area. He is currently running as the mayoral candidate for Manchester. I've had him on a few times before, like talking with Nick. He's a solid guy, believes very much in policing and getting rid of the nonsense ULEZ / ultra low / clean air zone nonsense, the green blob, as Ben Pyle would refer to it. He's very against all that business. We'll be talking to him. And then Dr. Kat Lindley beaming in from Texas to finish off the show today. All that is still to come. So just looking at some of the headlines this morning, one case in particular, we touched on this yesterday about AstraZeneca. They're coming out now and saying, well, you know, some of our recipients may have had some very bad reactions and deaths, but of course it's very, very rare, very rare. But then there's another story making the news on Sky News today. Actually, AstraZeneca has acknowledged its COVID-19 vaccine could cause a rare but deadly blood clotting condition after being hit with a lawsuit from dozens of claimants, including a father of two left with permanent brain injury after he received the jab. And I'm going to rewind back to what, 2021, 2022, when I started my career, in inverted commas, on the media, which was sitting in my car talking to myself on my mobile phone and nobody was listening. The first things that I talked about was the AstraZeneca jab. And if you trawl back through my timeline, which I'm going to do just out of curiosity, there's a documentation trail there of the AstraZeneca rollout, as reported by me. And one of the things that happened with the AstraZeneca jab was at one stage about 24 different countries across Europe had suspended the use, didn't ban it, didn't pull it, but suspended the use over, I quote, blood clotting concerns. Now, this was 2 to 3 years ago. This was just after, immediately after that thing was rolled out. Guess where the only country that didn't suspend its use was? Yes, the UK. The only place that didn't suspend the use of AstraZeneca was the United Kingdom. So now we're having these stories coming out to say, you know, dozens of claimants. Dozens? I would be shocked if it doesn't run into the tens of thousands of claimants causing a rare but deadly blood clotting condition. No, can you remember the guidelines then that they brought out? Well, it mightn't be suitable for the under 30s. Well, it mightn't be suitable for the under 40s. Well, it mightn't be suitable for the under 50s. Slowly, slowly. And where is it now? Where is this flagship vaccine now? No one knows. It's gone. It's disappeared. And they hope it'll dry up and blow away. But I'm pretty sure that that will not happen, because more and more of these stories are going to come out. And they're talking about setting aside compensatory funds. But sure, were we not told? This has been tested. This is safe. This is effective. The government were all over it. The newspaper, the mainstream media were all over it. Pop stars, soap stars, celebrities, if you want to call them that, were all over this, reassuring people that there was nothing to be concerned about. And now, all of a sudden, years later, the cracks are starting to appear. More and more people are coming out. And the same mainstream media outlets that were demonizing people for not doing their part and rolling up their sleeve to take their juice, the death juice, are now reporting on these people whose lives have been ruined when they had their hand and part to play in it. Shame on them. That's what I say. Shame on Sky News. Shame on Sky News Australia. They were some of the biggest pushers of the mist and disinformation that ruined these people's lives to begin with. And now they have the audacity and the brass neck to be talking about how this man's life has been ruined. They had their part to play in it, along with everybody else. And that's my humble opinion, allegedly, and so on and so forth, just in case. I'm sure they're listening. I'm sure Murdoch, isn't he? Is Murdoch alive? He's on a yacht somewhere, probably in a semi-embalmed state, listening to Locked and Loaded right now. You know what time it is, and you can run, but you can't hide. As Johnny Cash said, sooner or later, God's going to cut you down. That's not a threat from me. That's from the big guy upstairs. But anyway, I got to take a break right now. And welcome Gemma back on again for round two on Locked and Loaded here this morning. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about.
And that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Do these people think that we don't have a memory? Do these people think that there are not literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of pieces of evidence just from the last 2 years where they pushed and pushed and pushed for people to take these things, and now all of a sudden they're saying, oh, this is a terrible story. We have to report this awful story, whenever they were part and parcel of the propaganda machine that was pushing men like this into getting jabbed up in the first place.
Well, absolutely. And of course, this particular story, AstraZeneca doing a climb down and saying we do admit now that in a very small inverted commas, number of people, it can cause this condition. Of course, this is what's come out of this high court case that 81 families and individuals combined have brought under the UK Consumer Protection Act. Now, this time last year, May 2023, under this case that's being brought, AstraZeneca said, no, our product is completely fine. Don't challenge the efficacy and the safety of it. Now, in court documents that have had to be submitted, they were submitted in February, and they've just reached the light of day. They do admit in those court documents, yes, in a very small number of cases, it does cause this critical condition. I pronounced it yesterday on the Sonia Poulton show, on the breakfast show. I need to write it down, but it causes blood clotting, effectively, strokes, bleeds, and heart attacks. In a very small number of cases, they say, of course, this will now be presented as crucial evidence. The families of the 81 people bringing this landmark case are absolutely delighted, but they said that's taken them 3 years to get them to admit to that. And of course, it's now trickling out into the mainstream, and it's been presented in court as evidence, so it can be reported as such. But yeah, I mean, do they think we forget? And we were, the UK was the last country to suspend AstraZeneca in 2021 after a raft of other European countries said, no, we don't think this is safe. It's dangerous. We've got too many deaths. And the damage was done here in the UK. And we were discussing this yesterday as this news seeped out. It shows the lobby that Big Pharma have on the UK government. You know, they had the UK government by the balls, effectively saying, don't you dare suspend it, keep it going, because of the money and the lobby that Big Pharma have in this country. It's absolutely appalling. I mean, it's such a struggle what those 81 families are going through. And that one case study you've highlighted there, Jamie Scott, he said he can never work again. His life-changing injuries, bleed on the brain, his wife was phoned from hospital 3 times. He's saying, your husband's going to die, get in here now. And of course, he hasn't died, but his life's irrevocably changed. A lot of the other families, their relatives are dead. They all stand to get £1 million each if they win under the UK Consumer Protection Act. 81 million, that's a lot of money to you and I, Rick. To AstraZeneca, it's a drop in the ocean. And yeah, the government have pledged to underwrite the legal costs in this one. They think we've forgotten. We haven't. Every time we, and anyone, if you're listening, watching TNT, we haven't forgotten at all. And these families will certainly never forget. But it's interesting that they've climbed down that tiny bit, AstraZeneca. From a year ago, they were denying any adverse effects at all. Now, at least they are having to admit it. This is a tip of a very horrible, big, lurking iceberg. Unfortunately, so many other millions of people affected, and they don't even know it yet. You know, they haven't quite joined the dots. That's what's so sad about this story.
It is. And, you know, a lot of the damage has, of course, been done. And I'm thinking particularly about Alex Mitchell, you know, who's been coming on Locked and Loaded, you know, on and off for the last 2 years, just after he lost his leg because of the AstraZeneca. He was a scaffolder. You know, he was a young, fit man with a family there, out working, supporting himself. First of all, he almost died when he was taken to the hospital with VIT, these vaccine-induced thrombocytosis, whatever the technical term for it is, VITT, all brought on by the AstraZeneca jab. Then he had to have his leg amputated. The guy's been going through the absolute mill, Gemma, for the last 2 to 3 years, never mind the physicality of what happened to him, but mentally as well. And of course, his whole life's trajectory has been altered, not necessarily for the best, at least at this point in time. We want to believe that the best is yet to come with everybody. But try telling that to someone who's lost a leg. Try telling that to somebody who's been languishing in a hospital bed for 6 months or maybe can't ever work again doing a job that they love to do. How do you compensate for that? You know, how do you put a figure on that? I think that's what they're trying to do. And the million sounds good. It's a lot of money. So I certainly wouldn't sneeze at it. But then again, would I want to have it in substitute for a fully functioning body and being able to get out there and earn for whatever life I have left? All of a sudden, it doesn't seem like so much.
No, and it's not. It's not over the course of a human life, especially if you're young. And it's just so interesting as well that yesterday when this leaked out about AstraZeneca admitting there was possibly a fault with a very small batch, with a very small cohort of people. That's their side of it. They also issued this lengthy statement about how many lives their drug jab had saved, you know, and they've got the brass neck, haven't they? These big, horrible, satanic, you can argue, institutions. They have no regard for human health whatsoever. And a million, like you say, a million. When you think about it, if you've got children that you're raising, you want to put through university or any kind of, you know, help your kids get on the property ladder or anything, a million's nothing. And we cover the cost of living in the UK and Ireland all the time here on TNT, whether it's manufactured or real, it hits you in the pocket. Mortgage rates have just gone up once again from all the big lenders in the UK and the banks. You know, that was only yesterday, another two. You know, it's so difficult for people financially. And that, yeah, it's a scandal of epic proportions. And that my hats are off to the people that brought this case under the UK consumer protection law. What a great thing to do. Your product wasn't what it was advertised. That could apply to anything, pair of shoes, a car, a Hoover, you know.
Yeah.
That was a very shrewd move. And it does seem to be paying off. But I think this is one in the High Court that will go on for years. This won't be a few months. This will be years. And some of those people might not make it to the end, unfortunately.
And of course, if one of these or several of these cases do go the way of the people bringing the case against AstraZeneca, for example, you know, those test cases will then be used and applied to so many more people, I believe, will come out of the woodwork. Because historically speaking, Jim, a lot of people don't report adverse reactions. They don't report, they're fobbed off, or they don't want to appear to be, you know, anti-vaxxers or, you know, anti-establishment. You know, they don't want to offend anybody. So they'll just take what the doctor says. Oh, it's just, it's something else. It's something you're eating. It's stress. It's not damage that's potentially been caused by these injections. So I think what it will do is it'll bring a lot of more people out of the woodwork on that one too. We've only got a few minutes left. Other news headlines or the stuff that we were covering earlier on. Want to give us a little recap on that one?
Well, just a couple actually that very caught my attention. Obviously, police are at the moment giving a press conference. I'll come back with that and the details of that in the next hour about this stabbing incident in East London, which they say is critical. A man, 36-year-old man, has been arrested. Five people in hospital after reports of a man with a yellow hoodie on roaming the streets of Hainault in East London and stabbing people. Not great for Sadiq Khan, is it? Who's up for mayoral re-elections, and part of his campaign was on knife crime and all he's done to reduce it. So that's not going to look good for him. And also, Keir Starmer, leader of the Labour Party here in the UK, has done a U-turn on gender. He says he now aligns with biology and says that it's absolutely right to say that women are the only people that can have a cervix. One of his own MPs said that not long ago, and he criticised her and said, no, that's completely wrong. And he said he didn't know what a woman was and how to define a woman. Today, I think in line with the CAS report, he said, no, sex is determined by biology. So a complete U-turn there from a politician. Who knew, Rick? Who knew? There we go.
Who knew too? And again, he's a fool, because it's not so long ago that we were able to just pull up any amount of evidence that showed he didn't know his arse from his elbow a few months ago. And now all of a sudden he's been enlightened on the biological front. What an absolute vapid, insipid man Keir Starmer is. He's just the classic grey man. He just blends in. If there was a grey sky up there and he was flying Superman style through the sky, you wouldn't even see him. He'll just blend in with the greyness. But, don't even start me on Angela Rayner as deputy. What a combination, Starmer and Rayner, eh? But we could go into that, maybe save that one for Friday. We'll have a right old session bashing the pair of them. But in the meantime, thank you so much, Gemma, for all your input this morning. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. And of course, you'll be back in the next hour with the Freeman Report doing the same thing, bringing us the breaking news from the UK and Ireland. In the meantime, got to take a break now. And Nick Buckley is incoming. Going to talk about his mayoral campaign up in Manchester. So we'll see what he's up to when we come back after this break here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
TNT's Jason Burmes.
Unfortunately, constantly, I'm talking to these political analysts that don't see any way out of the current situation except vote harder. And then every time that I bring up the fact that we have not only a corrupt system via the mail-in ballots, via the ballot harvesting, but the machines, I get a lot of radio silence. I get sometimes a nod and an agreement with me, but there's never a solution that's presented other than we need to go back to paper ballots and voter ID. Duh. Can anyone tell me how we get there? Can anybody tell me how we get there?
Jason Burmes on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
The top of the hour, we'll keep on top of the news.
It's the most important thing we can do.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Yes, without any further ado, let's get straight down to business with my next guest, the one and only Nick Buckley. Nick and I have spoke several times so far this year, but now we're on the cusp of this mayoral race that's going on up in Manchester. Nick, welcome back to the show. And hard to believe we're at the verge of finding out if you're going to be the next mayor of Greater Manchester or not. Exciting times.
It is less than 48 hours now until the polling booths open.
I tell you what, and you've been working hard at it this year. You and I have talked at least twice here on Locked and Loaded, and yet here we are now at less than 48 hours to go. For people that aren't maybe aware of who you are or haven't heard you before, Nick is an independent candidate for the Mayor of Greater Manchester for 2024. And in his words, it's time for real change from a local lad. And I think if anything's going to happen in this country, in the UK or in Ireland, Nick, it has to be real change happening from grassroots people with no affiliations and no agendas and no buy-ins from external sources to try and get the country back into a reasonably good shape. So I think you fit the bill for that. Should you become elected, then I believe you're going to do some proper work for the people of Manchester.
Oh, absolutely. It's been party politics and career politicians that have got us into the mess we're in, selling their souls so they can climb that greasy pole to success. I'm quite happy doing 3 years as Mayor of Greater Manchester. And if then I'm voted out, but I know I've left this place a better city region than when I found it, knowing my grandchildren will have a better life. That's a huge success. I'm not in this for me. I just want to leave this fantastic, amazing country of mine in a better place.
And that's a good aspiration because, believe it or not, my own personal goal for these shows that I do every day is if you take the time to join as a listener, I want to believe that at the end of the show, you'll be in a better condition than when you arrived. I want to believe that if you come on as a guest, that at the end of this little session we have, you don't go, Oh man, I just completely wasted 20 minutes of my life talking to Rick Munn. I want to believe that you've got something from it or you've enjoyed the experience. I think if that's your goal with what you're trying to do with your legacy or the people of Manchester, that's a very, very good thing. I'm looking at some of the things that you've posted up on your social media. There's a pinned tweet here. It's a pledge, your five key pledges. Just real quickly, I'm going to read them out. Fix the police to keep us safe. Hammer criminals. Increase stop and search. Reclaim the streets. Fantastic. Keep your car. You say no to the CAS schemes, the ULEZ schemes, the congestion charges, 15-minute cities. Sounds fantastic. Reduce your council tax bill. Who doesn't want a reduction in their council tax bill? Sounds fantastic. Referendum on the role of mayor. Give you a vote on whether or not that position is kept. And also name and shame failing civil servants. I will hold responsible those who waste our tax money. Now, I'm going to put on my cynical hat just for a minute here. I'm going to pretend I'm a cynical voter in Manchester. I'm going to say, Nick, that sounds fantastic. You're ticking all the boxes. But then again, it's pre-election. All politicians try and tick the boxes pre-election. Why should I believe you? Why should I believe you're going to do any of that if you get elected as mayor of Manchester, Greater Manchester? Why?
Fantastic question. And that's what every voter needs to be asking every politician, because it's quite easy to lie to the public and fool them, because we've been fooled now for 70 years and it's still working. We're a lot more stupid than we think we are. So we're easily fooled as a nation, as a people. My five pledges there, everything in the power of the mayor. So I'm not talking about extra spending because I don't have the money. I'm not talking about better projects and building infrastructure because if we don't have the money, I don't have the power to do that. And the shaming the civil servants because I know I can't sack them. So if I was saying I'm going to sack incompetence, well, I know I can't do that. So all those pledges are the things I know 100% I can do. And that's what I've been saying to people. I've not promised the world. I've not promised gold paved streets. It's the things I know I can deliver that are in my power.
And you put another post up. I appreciate the answer to that one. You put another post up here to say, this is just your own words again as part of your campaign. My biggest strength is that I'm not a politician, just a local guy who wants to improve the country and the city. So in the past, 3 years, 4 years, if you were talking out, for example, about climate change or what was going on with the climate, they would say, oh, you're not a scientist, you can't comment on that. If you were talking about the COVID scandal, oh, you're not a doctor, you can't talk about that. Now this question could be leveled at you. Well, you want to be a mayor, you want to run for politics, but you're not a politician. That effectively, in my opinion, is a strength, not a weakness at this moment in time. From your canvassing, from your getting out there talking to the people that may be voting for you, have they received it in the same way? Have they said, listen, I can't take you seriously, you don't even have any background in politics? Or are they saying, that's refreshing?
One or two people have said that. I put another post out that compared my work history to Andy Burnham, who's the mayor of Greater Manchester. And he's never had a proper job. He went from university straight into working for an MP, Safe Seat, minister. And I put my work experience, working, opening a business, working at Manchester Airport, working with kids to stop them getting involved in crime, running Manchester City Centre for Manchester Council, and then starting a crime reduction charity. And there's one or two people commented going, thank you for that, Nick. I now know I'm not voting for you because you don't have the experience of the politician. And that's fantastic. But my point on that is, why do you think more politics is the answer to our problems? We've got more politicians than we've ever had. We're spending more money, more tax money than we've ever had. We've got more bureaucracy, more red tape, more civil servants. And everything's been getting worse for decades. And if you think the answer is more of that, then I'm not the candidate for you. The people I want to vote for me were saying, we need change. We need these people to listen to me, because I don't mean me, I mean me, the voter, because I'm the public. You're a civil servant. You're a public servant. You need to start doing what we want you to do, because you're not our masters. You're not our overlords. You're public servants. And at the moment, our political class think they're our kings and queens and our overlords. And it might seem like that, but that's not true.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. There's a guy that I have on here on a regular basis called David Thunder. He's what you would classify as a political philosopher. That's what he studies all the time. And one of the first things that he ever said when he came on was, he said, if we are to see any real meaningful change in the political landscape, effectively, we have to wipe the board completely clean. And if new people are coming in, it can't be from established legacy political parties. They have to be new candidates, fresh blood, or people coming to this at a certain point of their life with life experience and a genuine desire to serve the people. And that's why I think, personally speaking, if someone knocked my door and was canvassing and they said, I'm a representative from this party, that will immediately get the door shut in their face. If somebody says, look, I'm running as an independent, I'm trying to run my own campaign here, I'll give that time, that person, the time of day, because I can see that if there's any future down that political route, you know, a lot of people are skeptical about it. It has to be from independent, grassroots, non-compromised people such as yourself. Now, we've got to take a little break now, Nick, just for 30 seconds for some headlines. When we come back at the other side, this business of crime, I was doing a little scan over the Manchester Evening News last night, as I do before I go to bed, looking at some of the crime stats and people that have been locked up there. I'm not going to lie, I'm not very impressed. They were boasting about locking up 24 criminals last month. With a population the size of Manchester, with the amount of crime that's going on there, hardly something worth boasting about, but boast about it they did. Let's look at crime, what you can do to get tough on it, when we come back at the other side here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
What brings you here?
News entirely.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. There are fresh hopes of a ceasefire in Gaza as Hamas considers a new proposal for a 40-day truce tabled by Israel. Meanwhile, anger is rising in Tel Aviv, where anti-government protests have ramped up with a vengeance, calling for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to resign over his handling of the war. And AstraZeneca has for the first time admitted in court that its COVID-19 vaccine can cause a rare, deadly blood-clotting side effect.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on Today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Okay, I'm talking this morning live, unscripted and uncensored and all that jazz with Nick Buckley, who's less than 48 hours to go before the polls open for the Manchester mayoral election race. Now, one of the things that you're very big on, Nick, is crime, reducing crime, getting police to do what police should be doing, which is reduce crime, especially on the streets. So last night, just I looked up on Manchester Evening News to see what the word in the street was in your manner. So there's a picture here, a photo collage of a rogues gallery by the looks of it. It said the 23 criminals locked up this month in and around Greater Manchester include a bent cop, predators and killers. And that's wonderful. I'm glad these people are behind bars now. They're not on the streets. But mathematically, call me an old cynic or a moaner or a pessimist, if you like, but 23 people in a month, annualize that up. What's that? 250 people in a year for a population the size of Greater Manchester. Is that something to boast about, or is that progression?
Nothing to boast about. Every society, every group has criminals within it. It's a human trait to try to cut corners, to try to take things that are not yours. And as societies and civilizations, we've always had to deal with those people. Now, the problem with the courts is a UK problem. It's not the mayor's problem. The mayor has no influence over the courts, and rightly so, by the way. We don't want politicians messing with those things. But it's our government. Our government keeps telling our court system, stop sending people to jail because we've got no places. Well, that might be true. The answer is build another prison. That's the answer. Did you know that judges in the UK got a memo from the government, I think it was last month or 2 months ago, asking them, if you can, don't send rapists to jail because we're almost out of places. Mm-hmm. Rapists, don't send them to jail. It's like, this is like the Twilight Zone now. We wonder why people are dying on the streets. We wonder why women can't walk home from work safely. We wonder why no one uses public transport. We're turning into a Mad Max region. So it's horrendous.
Yeah, that's sadly the way it is playing out. And I make that joke a lot. You know, we're turning a society at the minute's going to a cross between Mad Max and the Terminator. It certainly is. There's some places of England. Why would you want to walk the streets? Because even if they do apprehend somebody that may attack you, the chances of them doing jail time are slim, especially when directives are being given, the likes of which you have just described. Now, that's the crime on the crime front. The other thing I would say, I suppose, is what you got to watch out for is voter apathy. Now, I know a lot of people listening in at the minute are super despondent, disenfranchised, disillusioned with the whole electoral process. And a lot of people went, you know what, to hell with it. I want to just spoil my vote. I'm not turning out at all. Your own take on this one, I'm giving your own take on this one, is, again, a post that you put up yesterday. This is how Burnham will win. It's also how we can win, as in you guys can win, if you reject this trick and go out and vote for the person they didn't want on the television. So your quote here was, the greatest con ever played was convincing the poor not to vote, because, you know, people are going to vote whether or not we abstain or not. And the chances are that if we do abstain, then we're not adding weight behind somebody like yourself. And the default position will go back to the like of Burnham. So, you know, what is the vibe? Or I know you've done a lot of work. You're out campaigning. Have you encountered a lot of voter apathy? Or what's your assessment of that being, Nick, in your neck of the woods?
There's a lot of voter apathy. A lot of people have given up on politics in the UK and in Greater Manchester. Part of me thinks, just wants to shake them, shake some sense into them. But the other part of me says, do you know what? You can't blame them. We've spent decades demobilising these people, you know, and making sure that they believe their vote doesn't matter where it does. That's why they want you to think your vote doesn't matter, because they're terrified of you voting, because you're not going to vote what they want to do. So they would rather have you stay at home, watch Coronation Street on benefits and keep your mouth shut. That's a deal we've done with them. Keep your mouth shut and we'll pay you to be quiet, sit at home and don't say anything. Mm. And that's such a shame, because these are English people. England ruled the world. You know, we gave the world, the modern world. We created most inventions. And the best we can do with our people now is to pay them to be quiet. And This has taken decades. So I'm saying to people all the time, find your spirit, find your patriotism, go out and vote. If there's no one worth voting for, spoil your ballot. At least that gets registered then. Mm. Can you imagine an election where 40% of people spoil their ballot? That will send shockwaves around the country. You know, and also, don't vote for the lesser of two evils. That's what I'm always being told. Oh, I don't want Labour, so I'm going to vote Tory. Or I don't want Tory, so I'm going to vote Lib Dems. They're all as bad as each other. Stop voting for the lesser of two evils, because you're still voting for evil. Vote for someone independent. Vote for an individual. Research these people standing going, I'm voting for this person, not because I'm part of the Labour Party or because I'm part of the Tory Party, because I like this person standing. Have you seen what they've done with their life? Have you seen what they're talking about? Vote for the individual. And then most importantly, hold those people to account. Don't let them lie to you without consequences. Don't let them trick you. Hold them to account. In a democracy, you get the politicians you deserve. And at the moment, as a country, we've let ourselves down by keep voting in crooks, perverts, idiots, and people who want to climb the greasy pole.
You know what? I mean, I don't know what else you could say to make your case here this morning. I think you've delivered your message about as cleanly and succinctly as you possibly could, as you have on the other times that you've also appeared in the show. The only thing I have to say is, listen, if you're in the Greater Manchester area and you're able to vote, get your asses out and put a mark down beside a Nick Buckley for mayor. You can find him on X at Nick Buckley, MBE, and also he has a website, Nick Buckley, #4, mayor, mayor.co.uk. Still time to make that decision, and of course, get out there and support him in the polls within the next 48 hours. So listen, my best wishes out towards you, Nick. I really do hope you turn the apple cart over with this one, and it would be great to welcome you back as the new mayor of Greater Manchester. But even if you don't manage to do that, I would still like to keep in contact with you, because I believe you've very much got your finger on the pulse of what's going on up in your neck of the woods and are a great commentator on very pertinent social issues. So thank you very much to you, Nick Buckley. Best wishes to you, and let's see what happens at the polls. So all the best to you. And we've got to take a break right now. And when we come back at the other side, we've got Kat Lindley beaming in from Texas. So don't go away. We'll be right back here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
I was a quarterback at Hardaway High School. College first round draft pick, on and off the field. We were taught to not show any signs of weakness. During the football season, I would stop eating. But I didn't know I was depressed. I thought that something was wrong with me. For 20 plus years was physical, physical, physical. We didn't have any education behind what mental health was. I started to learn it starts here first. If this is together, I'll be better as a father, as a man, and as a husband. Put the importance on your mental health. I'm not scared to talk about it anymore. The first tool is therapy. The second one is positive self-talk. And then journaling, putting your thoughts on paper. We have to redefine what being a strong man is and heal, love your mind.
Hi, I'm Abel.
I often forget to mention that he's an amputee because Abel will try any activity he can.
My arm helps me with basically everything.
He doesn't see what he can't do, he sees what he can do.
Yeah, okay. This is helping.
The War Amps has just given him the ability to do all the activities every kid can do.
When you donate to the War Amps, you help kids like me. Thank you.
You're with Rick Munn on Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Oh, yes, indeed. What an absolute blitzkrieg of a morning it's been. I've had the most fun on this show I've had in a long time, and hopefully that's not going to come to a crashing halt when I talk to my next guest here. I'm very happy to be joined again by the one and only Dr. Kat Lindley, beaming in from the Lone Star State, aka Texas. Good morning, and how are you this beautiful day?
Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good, and I'm happy to see you, talk to you again. I'm liking this new time slot that I'm on. I moan about it a little bit. I like to start earlier and finish earlier, but one of the benefits is I get to talk to some of my American friends again and don't have to get you out of your pit at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, which you very kindly used to do back in the bad old days of TNT. So it's a little bit more sociable for you now. Dr. Kat Lindley, physician, number one, physician, number two, president of the Global Health Project, and number three, director of the Global COVID Summit. Where do you get the time to do all this work? You're always doing something, aren't you?
I think it's good to be busy.
Well, you must. You never bloody stop, and you don't sleep either by the sounds of things. But I'm happy to have you back on. I'm just bigging you up here because you're a very valued guest on here, and I always like to spend time talking with you. Where are we going to start? Listen, we've got a limited time, so let's talk about something we've bandied about, you and I, for 2 years now. I remember the very first time you ever came on Locked and Loaded, we talked about the World Health Organization. We talked about pandemic treaties. We talked about international health regulations. And there's been a lot of stopping and starting in and around this topic over the last few years, literally. Is it going to go? Won't it go? What will happen? What won't happen? Where are we at right now with this? And should we be concerned?
So recently we received drafts of both, a draft of the new pandemic treaty and a draft of the amendments to international health regulation. Now, the language is a little bit changed. Some people think it's watered down and things like that. But in all honesty, the substance of the documents is still there. The articles have been kind of shuffled around, hidden in different things. Some words have changed from censorship to surveillance. They still want 100-day vaccines with limited to no liability. Director General will still have the right to call the public health emergency of international concern and as such close the borders. Make us do another round of vaccines that only they approve, treatments, lockdowns, and things like that. So as far as I'm concerned, and I know you follow Dr. David Bell as well and Dr. Mm-hmm. Meryl Nass, all three of us still strongly feel that this is still something we don't want. We need to make sure that our countries say no to it. And essentially, we really, truly need to exit the World Health Organization.
Okay. We need to exit this WHO setup. You put a post up yesterday, I think it was yesterday on 28th. What day is it? 2 days ago, it was referenced an article that was published in the Telegraph here in Britain, mm-hmm. and you made a commentary on it. And these are your words here, so let's pick this apart. Why the treaty could do more harm than good. So in other words, what are we getting so worked up about? Are we not just making much ado about nothing, or should we be concerned? Next month, 194 member states of the WHO will vote on acceptance of two documents that are intended to transform the international public health and the way countries interact with the WHO. Director General declares an emergency. So if it is formalized, and of course it's if, it hasn't happened yet, these changes will be legally binding and govern the relationship between countries and the WHO. Now that causes me concern, because I'll tell you why. In a selfish way, Northern Ireland, or Ireland where I live, mm-hmm. especially the north rather than the south, during the scandemic, as I call it, or the plandemic, we got off reasonably lightly here in the north of Ireland. The Republic, not so much. Countries like Australia, countries like Canada, blue states in America versus red states in America, there didn't seem to be any uniformity on mandates. There didn't seem to be uniformity on masking. There didn't seem to be uniformity on lockdowns. As we know, Sweden pretty much stayed open for business during the whole time that all other countries in the world were locking down. So am I right in saying what their goal is here is to say, next time, not if this happens again, but when this happens again, Sweden won't get away with that. Texas won't get away with that. Northern Ireland won't get away with that. We'll all be working together. We'll all be dancing to the same tune. We'll all be in lockstep. Am I right that that is the assessment of where they want to take this?
Exactly. The states, the countries are not going to be able to decide what's best for their own regions. Because as you know, even, you know, during the peak of the pandemic, let's call it, different countries, like you said, did differently based on the numbers, people being ill and all that, and, you know, the uptake, whatever. But now with the new regulations, essentially the whole world will be under the threat from Tedros, because he'll be able, not only, like I said, close us down, but tell us what to do. The doctors will have to use the medications approved by the World Health Organization. And like I said, you know, that censorship to do. The doctors will have to use the medications approved by the World Health Organization. And like I said, you know, that censorship from article, I think it was in article 44, maybe, I forget what it was. But that was actually stricken out, but now it's in the appendix. And it's called surveillance. The country member states are still going to have to surveil the narrative around, and the doctors and other scientists who are going against the narrative will have to face the consequences because the World Health Organization was the member states to kind of monitor what's going on. And then, you know, if we step out of line, be dealt with.
You find that this changing of language is part of the globalists' playbook at the moment. We're talking about health here, but I have another regular guest on here, a chap called Tim Hinchliffe, who's a guru when it comes to CBDCs and digital IDs and all these pushes that are going on behind the scenes. So he put a piece up yesterday. He follows this very, very closely, but this is just to tie in with what you're saying, removing it from the main article, put it in an appendix, change the language around a little bit, make it seem a little bit more attractive to get this thing pushed through. Tim said, and this is a quote from, let me see, Governor Khalid Humaydan, the Central Bank of Bahrain. I'm sure you've never heard of him before, but what he's pushing towards the WEF is, we're probably going to stop calling it Central Bank Digital Currency, or CBDC. And I think the reason is because it has a lot of negative connotations attached to it right now. It's going to be called some type of digital cash. And at some time, hopefully, we'll be able to go 100% digital. So they're pivoting away from this CBDC because it's got a lot of bad press to it. Climate change has got a lot of bad press to it. Vaccines have got a lot of bad press to it. You know, lockdowns have got a lot of bad press to it. Is this part of the globalist playbook? They're just applying this with these pandemic regulations. They're tweaking them a little. They're making them sound a little bit more fluffy, a little bit more nice to try and get a bigger buy-in.
That's exactly right, because they got rid of the word vaccine passport. Now they're calling it travel documents. And they're saying they don't necessarily have to be digital. So if they are paper, they cannot be copied or things like that. So what has happened, you know, this is one good thing that's happened. Because of the pushback from all of us, yourself, you know, other people from UK, United States, Estonia, Germany, from everywhere, they've had to keep on revising these documents and changing the words. So they're kind of running away from the narrative as well, because they have to. But what people need to understand, no matter what, it's essential to know that this essence of the document remains. For example, in the pandemic treaty, first of all, One Health still stays. But now, because they cannot really say what they want to do since we had this huge pushback, now they're saying, well, we're going to come up with the details in a year for some things. And for the One Health, we actually have 2 years to come up with the details, procedures, and policies. So essentially, they want everyone in May to sign this document. And then we'll find out in a year or 2 years from now what's in it. That's something that we did. I don't know if you followed Obamacare, but Nancy Pelosi essentially did the same thing during Obamacare. She said, you have to sign this bill before you can see what's in it. And WHO is doing the same play. Sign now and you'll find out 2 years from now what's in it.
I don't know if you guys in America and Texas, they have, you know, these fairgrounds where you take the kids and they've got roller coasters and they've got popcorn and, you know, you can throw things at clowns and win prizes. Well, there's a thing called the Lucky Dip, and it's usually a big barrel and it's filled full of sawdust. And in that barrel, there are mystery prizes or booby prizes, but you pay your money and then you take your chances. You stick your arm into the barrel and you hope and you pray that you get something good, not something nasty. And as you're talking here this morning, I'm seeing a big barrel filled full of sawdust. And I say, okay, you pay your money, you take your chances. That sounds like what you're describing here with this setup under the IHR and the WHO.
Essentially, that's exactly it. And another thing that people need to understand, they are actually going against their own constitution. When it comes to the amendments to international health regulation, they have to give the member states 4 months notice and say, these are the amendments. Now you have 4 months to look at them and decide what's going to happen. Instead, we are what, April 30th, and they came up with the latest draft last week, which means they are in violation of their own constitution. But who's going to hold them to it, right? No one does. Because as you and I both know, your representatives in Ireland and my representatives in the United States are just so happy to sign this on. So it's really up to the people to keep on pushing back and making sure that it doesn't happen.
Oh, my goodness me. Let's tilt a little bit, all right, because I'm trying to squeeze as much as I can into the time that we have here. So I'm trying to cover multidimensional stuff because you're about more than medicine, all right? You've been covering oppression and totalitarianism, your background. You grew up in and among that. So you know what it's like firsthand, okay? And you can see it heading that way in America, for example, or in Ireland, where we didn't have that kind of background in Eastern Europe back in the day. So you reposted something yesterday, which I find was very provocative in terms of provoking thought. It was a post by a guy called James Lindsay. I'm not even sure who that is. But anyway, he talks about communist activities and communist targets, okay? So he said the four communist activities are to infiltrate, number one, to agitate, number two, to desecrate, number three, and to confiscate, number four. And the three communist targets are the family, religion, and property. Okay, so again, you've experienced this growing up back in the day before you came to America, and you're living there now, but you're seeing shades of that happening at the minute, like infiltration, agitated. Who isn't agitated these days? Who's not worked up at the minute and angry and agitated about what's happening? Desecrate, they're desecrating everything. They're desecrating our children's mental health. They're desecrating our children's bodies with transitioning and pumping them full of puberty blockers. They're wrecking their brains by keeping them away from school or by telling them they're going to kill their grandparents if they give them a hug at Christmas time. Who hasn't been desecrated if not children? And confiscation. They're trying to take away our rights. What happened to constitutions during the lockdown years, the European Court of Human Rights and all that business? You've got a right to do this. You've got a right to do that. All that went out the window. So I suppose what I'm saying in essence is, are we not just seeing the communist playbook happening before our very eyes? And if nothing, that should certainly spur us into action.
Yes, I say it a little bit differently than James. And James is a good guy to follow when it comes to this Maoism, you know, totalitarianism and things like that. Mm-hmm. I just say this is war on family, faith, and freedom. Mm-hmm. That's really essentially what it is. For these things to flourish, you know, this totalitarian overtake in our lives, you have to break down the family. And that's what we're seeing. We have been seeing this for like last 50, 60 years, where there was, you know, slow, steady breakdown of the family to the point where now we're seeing the fruits of what has happened. And then in a communist country, like one of my first memories, you know, looking back, was the fact that I was not allowed to discuss that I go to church when I went to school. You know, it was something you don't talk about. So they attack the religion because they know if you believe in something greater than yourself, that you have hope. And if you have hope, then you're going to think that you can win. So they need to break you down. They need to break down your spirit. They need to get rid of your hope. And that's what happens with the religion. And then the freedom. We've seen a country like United States, you know, you talk about epitome of freedom, this beacon of hope. Where are we? We had mandates. That's unconstitutional. Freedom of speech, our most essential right, we have to defend it in Supreme Court. When has that happened before? So essentially, the lockdowns, what happened these last 4 years, has been a global attack on all of our countries, all of our people. It's faith, family, and freedom. And now food. For some reason, they like the F, right? So you have faith, family, freedom, and now they're going after the food, because if they take away our food, then we're going to depend on them. And that's what they want.
Control. I think they say all roads lead to Rome, but in terms of the globalist dystopian playbook, all roads lead to control. And all the things that we're describing, what's this IHRW? It's about control, control over what will go into your body if they declare another pandemic, where you can go, how often you can leave your house, what you can say if you're online. Censorship is going through the roof at the minute. We're having hate speech laws introduced in Ireland. We've seen them introduced in Wales. They're trying to push them through in England as well. In Australia, this move towards digital IDs, everything leads towards control. But you mentioned one word there, and I think this is a good positive way to end this. Could be construed as quite a depressing conversation here this morning, but we're dealing with reality here. We're not living on hopium here. This is reality. But hope, what is hope? I used to study the meanings of words, and for some reason, the definition of hope stuck with me. And this is what hope means. It means that when you look around you and you see everything looking to be going down the toilet or into the abyss, and everything seems absolutely impossible to overcome, you still have this belief that things can turn out for the best. That's what hope is. And the opposite of hope is despair. That's simply looking at the same circumstances with the same eyes, but feeling there's no way out, there's no way forward, we're beaten, we're done, and we're finished with. I think it's crucial that we keep hope alive these days. And that's why I like talking to you as well, because I know you have a faith and you have a belief that sooner or later justice will be done and things will turn out right. We've just got to keep banging it out, and we'll have to keep our boots on, and we'll have to keep the armor on, and we'll have to stay in the thick of it, do we not?
100%. But we also need to be ready to keep on talking to our children about this. I do fear that this is not our war. I fear that this is the something that our children and their children are going to have to deal with it. But if we share our values, our dreams, our hope for them, and make sure that the hope is alive in them, then I have no fear. I'm like you know, I really truly think that at the end of the day, this will be fine. We're going to win, but we need to make sure that we talk to our children, that we give them values, we give them hope, we pray with them, we share stories so that they know where they come from, so that they are prepared for what the future is going to bring to them.
Yeah, and because our kids do look up to us at the end of the day, what other point of reference do they have in many occasions? And if our heads are down, if we feel like we're being crushed and being defeated, that will pass on to our kids, and they'll be inheriting that broken spiritedness, which we can't have about us. We have to keep optimistic. We have to keep our shoulders back. We have to keep our chest up. We have to keep our chin up there, and we have to keep pushing relentlessly towards the mark. Oh my goodness, I could preach right now, but I don't have time because we're coming up to the end of the show. So on that note, I'll direct people your way. If you don't already follow Dr. Kat Lindley, shame on you. Repent and make atonement for that by following her on her X or Twitter profile at KL Veritas, V-E-R-I-T-A-S, which I believe is Latin for truth. That's the only thing I remember from Latin that I was taught when I was a young lad at school. So follow her on there. And also you can check her out at globalcovidsummit.org/experts/Dr. Kat Lindley. So on that note, I think I've bigged you up enough for one day. Your head's probably expanding with all this adulation that you're receiving. So I don't know what you're going to do now. Maybe go back to bed or go out and conquer the world.
No, I have to go to work.
Got to go to work. That's nice. Well, I'm finished now.
This is the best way to start the day because you always pump me up and get me ready for the day. So.
Well, that's good. People joke with me that I only work 2 hours a day, but that's not true. I'm now off to do calls and research and get ready for tomorrow, but I'm loving it. And I know you love what you do as well. So have an absolutely epic day over in Texas. And hopefully we'll talk again sooner rather than later. That's the wonderful Dr. Kat Lindley. I'll be back again tomorrow morning, I hope, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. UK time. Stay tuned for James Freeman. This is Rick Munn, over and out.